Hello and welcome to the OT Podcast. I'm your host and mod, Enthusiasm Girl. So this week's topic, our second ever, is going to be a really meaty, interesting one. We're going to be talking about gender and fanfiction. Now, because of the topic, I need to issue a few warnings right off the top so that everyone knows exactly what to expect here. It's really important to me that people understand where we're coming from in taking this topic on. Warning number one, this episode is rated T for teen. There's some swearing, some frank discussion about genitalia, and we do talk about the alpha, beta, omega trope in case that squicks you out. So if those things aren't your jam or there are kids with you listening, maybe come back next week or find some headphones. Warning number two, we are very aware that there are an enormous variety of opinions out there on the very ideas of gender and feminism. And there's absolutely no way that we could represent all of them in an hour, especially considering that we're only three people and we each have our own biases and our own blind spots. For example, we don't hear from a cisgender male at all in this episode, which is unfortunate, but really a logistics issue. They're just hard to find in the world of fanfiction, and the ones that I've met all agreed that they didn't really feel comfortable getting into the topic. So any cisgender men out there who want to discuss this topic, please reach out to us. We would love to hear from you, and doing an all-male perspective episode would be really interesting. We also did attempt to talk about intersex characters in fanfiction, if anyone wonders why we've left that out. But to be honest, none of us had read enough of it to really have much to say. So again, if you want to talk about that, please reach out, because we didn't exclude you on purpose. That being said and out of the way, I hope that you enjoy the episode, and I hope that you find it as interesting to listen to as it was to talk about. So let's get started. Our contributors today are Dusty Soul, and we have Katie Mayo with us. I'd like to talk a little bit about the genders of the people you are going to listen to, because I think that will provide everybody with some context on the kind of opinions that they're getting, if anybody gets anybody up in arms about anything, so you understand people's life experiences and how they interact with their own gender. So I will go last, and I will let Dusty start. So what gender do you consider yourself? Let's start there.
I'm a gender. I've identified as a gender basically as soon as I got the whole gender thing figured out, which was when I was a sophomore in high school. I don't know how old that makes me, but yeah.
Okay, and you've said that then your preferred pronoun that we're going to use throughout this podcast, or we're going to try to, please correct me if I misuse a pronoun at any time, is they or them, correct?
Fae, fair, fen, or they, they're, them, yeah.
And for you, Katie, do you want to tell us a little bit about what gender you consider yourself?
I'm gender fluid. This is a conclusion that I came to very recently. So I'm a baby trans person here, just a baby. And when I say recently, I mean like within the last 2 months, pretty recently. But I've been interested in topics of genders for a way longer than that. And I was really interested in this topic because I write a lot of alternate gender fan fiction. So my preferred pronouns are, like, she and her can work, or they, them. It doesn't matter to me. I'm pretty casual about my pronouns.
Excellent. And just so everyone listening knows, your friendly mod here, I am a cisgender woman. That's how I identify myself. And so her is fine for me, and I'm going to try to respect your pronouns as well. Again, just to give everyone a little bit of context, right? So let's lay out a little bit of some ground rules here about what we're talking about when we talk about gender. Obviously, we've said that it's non-binary. I want to make a note of some of the terminology that we are going to be using, because we are going to touch on a variety of tropes, including the trope that is commonly referred to as always a girl. And I know that you, Dusty, have a concern about using always a girl that you wanted to address.
So my concern really just has to do with the fact that that notation is commonly used to, instead of as a disambiguation of magically or suddenly a girl, it's used to mean cisgender girl. So I personally feel that just with the way fandom is, like the context of fandom, that always a girl is now the default and no longer needs a disambiguation. And it's suddenly and magically that need that disambiguation. And that's why I feel that this new usage has come into popularity, and that's why it's here to stay, and that we shouldn't use it, because it implies that trans girls aren't always girls, which they most definitely are in many cases.
So on your Tumblr, that will be linked to in your bio, right, on the website, you have actually some new usages that you have proposed that we use when talking about the kinds of tropes that you see that play with gender in fan fiction. Do you want to describe them?
Yes, I described the new notations to be as clear and unambiguous as possible and to use the preferred language of each group involved.
I just want to lay that out because I have the list in front of me, but I'm probably going to, when we talk about it, revert to always a girl because that's the kind of more common usage that we're going to see right now. But I definitely wanted to make sure that we talked about the fact that there are definitely problematic issues with that. And I wanted to point out, because I thought your list was really wonderful, some ways that we could be more inclusive in the fanfiction community to make sure that we're being specific in how we're talking about gender. So the first thing I want to actually get into, in terms of getting into the weeds of talking about gender a little bit, though, is the big thing that we have to start with when we're discussing fanfiction is the actual demographics of who writes it. Because that's really, really crucial in understanding how gender gets written about in fan fiction and how specific characters get treated based on their gender in fan fiction. I did actually find a couple of studies. In this study that was done of AO3, what was interesting was that more respondents selected genderqueer than male. And when you actually look at the percentages, 90.3% of the more than 9,000 people surveyed identified as female. That's enormous for any community, especially one that doesn't segregate specifically that way. There's no rules stating that men can't. There's nothing to discourage men from doing it. It has just kind of self-evolved into a place where 90% of the people identify as female. 2.3% identified as transgender. Another 2.4% were androgynous. 2.3 were agender, 7.3 indicated that they were genderqueer, and then 1.9% indicated trans with the asterisk. So essentially, you do have a much larger sample size than in the regular population identifying as alternative genders. And in terms of people who actually said they identified as male, only 4.2% stated that they identified as male. So that tells you a little bit more about why we're making that assumption. It's not an assumption. We know now that fan fiction is predominantly written by people who are either an alternative gender or who are identifying as female. And as I said, that's enormous, just in terms of understanding how we talk about gender in fan fiction.
Like, it depends on how big the fandom is and what kind of content there's involved. There's lots of, like, anime that plays with gender. Just because there's a lot of tropes that are like, this character is secretly a girl and they're pretending to be a boy to fit in with this group or to go to this school or whatever. That kind of thing happens a lot in anime. So, like, those kinds of fandoms might have a more, like, loose idea of gender and much less likely to commit so strictly to the binary. So, like, big fandoms also generally bring in a bigger fan base, and by that logic should have more diverse variety of people. So based on the writers that I know, most of them are women, but there are undoubtedly more trans writers than cis male ones that I know of.
I also think that we're not including gaming fandom, which is definitely a thing. It's also a thing on AO3, but my brother's a really hardcore gamer, and he, like, the chat boards and things that he frequents are the same sort of, like, role-playing stuff. There are a lot of Tumblr blogs where it's like, ask so-and-so character from such-and-such show. Well, they have the same thing for video games, and it's the same sort of fandom, except instead of one person creating, it's a lot of RP message boards back and forth, and I think that's fandom behavior, but, you know, in our personal interactions and, of course, in our understanding of our online communities and their interactions, we don't see these things as being even remotely close together. So I do think there's a very distinct sort of male fandom engaging in these same creative behaviors that this more as you said, something like 90% you know, female fandom engage in, and that there's just not a lot of overlap because gaming is very acceptable for, you know, cisgender men and boys to be involved with than, say, BBC Sherlock fandom or anything else. You know, this is acceptable ways to bond with other people, to get involved, and it's very also, I think, that community vehemently rejects people who are not cisgender men, and that they sort of have cultivated their community, and I would think that maybe in some way our community of fanfiction on AO3 or FF.net is kind of accepting those rejects who don't have that particular communal creative energy outlet.
Well, what's interesting to me is that I also feel like there are many things that women might like to talk about, conversations they might like to have on the larger internet. But the problem is, on the larger internet, you do see a lot of harassment. So once we start to talk about the types of fics that people write, I mean, I've been on AO3 and fanfiction.net for a long time. I've never really encountered rape threats to something I've written, no matter how ridiculous. And I mean, you're talking about a community where you're sharing deep sexual fantasies, you're writing things about rape, you're writing things about feminism, you're writing things about transgender, kind of what it was like to grow up like that. And you're not getting that complete level of hatred that you might get if you put that somewhere else. So I think that it creates a kind of a safe space for gender exploration that I don't think people really appreciate who aren't in that fan fiction world is there. Do you guys agree with that or disagree?
Yeah. I also wanted to mention a Tumblr post kind of on this topic. I'll try to find it for you to link. But it basically was about how in comics fandom, specifically, but also sort of like TV, other fandom, the male side of fandom, if you will, is a facts-finding, curative sort of fandom where they're just collecting all these things. And then that, you know, that pressure in that boys club, you know, is in this weird relationship with this other type of fandom that's very transformative in nature. That's one theory that's been posed, and I find it particularly compelling.
Yeah, it's funny that you say transformative because, I mean, the group that runs Archive of Our Own is called the Organization for Transformative Works, and that's what we're really talking about here, is that you do have a community that isn't built on engaging with geek fandom in necessarily the same way as the traditional cisgender male-dominated fandom has, right? We are all about transforming the works and engaging with the creators in a little bit of a different way, which is interesting to think about. If that's a feminine thing, or if that's something that is maybe just the opposite of a cisgender male way of thinking, it's interesting to consider. Now, one thing to talk about with regards to the fact that it is so many women writing fan fiction and it is so many people who identify as kind of non-binary or alternative genders is it's interesting to think then in that context about how fan fiction treats characters of different genders across all types of fics, because you have this community of women. Most of what they're writing is about two men, because let's face it, I mean, I'm sure I can pull a study up on it, but I don't think I need to quote the statistics for people to know that the amount of male-male slash fan fiction out there is intense and enormous and makes up the bulk of it. It's interesting to have that dichotomy between all of these women who really are only interested in writing about worlds that are predominantly stocked with men. So why do you feel that that happens?
Well, like, the media that we're given doesn't really give us much choice. We talked about this in the first episode, that a lot of female characters are poorly written and uninteresting characters, and that doesn't give you very much to go off of if you want to just take the characters as they are in the show and write about them. So when these male characters are the ones that are developed and given better storylines and given better personalities and given more interesting things to do, then they're going to be more compelling characters to write about.
I would actually like to counter that, though, Katie.
Okay.
Just to challenge that assumption. Cause, no, because I think that is the most common assumption you hear, right? The default answer to that question kind of seems to be, well, you know, male characters are just the ones who are primarily the most interesting to write about. I think that that does hide a little bit of people's bias, though, without them necessarily realizing it. Because if that's the case, then you have to understand, too, that there's very little Orange is the New Black fan fiction.
Yeah.
There's very little Weeds fan fiction. So in cases where you have these really complex, well-written female characters, that's not translating into more fan fiction written about them.
True. Okay.
And in shows that do have good female characters, you're not always seeing that being translated into more femme slash. And the other thing I think that flies in the face of that is that you say that it's because men are more compelling, but there are many, many, many shippers out there who can take a male character who has literally had one line in something, and they will write about that male character infinitely more than the better drawn, more complex female character standing alongside them. So the example there is in Avengers fandom. But in Avengers fandom, for example, you have miles and miles and miles of fan fiction being written about Bucky Barnes, who kind of had a fairly prominent role in The Winter Soldier and has had an arc that interests people, which is fair. But compare that to the amount of fan fiction written about Natasha Romanoff, and I'd argue that there's infinitely more being written about him than being written about her. And, I mean, she's even got a lot of fan fiction written about her. But when you even then compare her to someone like Pepper Potts. Now, Pepper Potts, unfortunately, is not only not written about as often as she should be, given how amazing she is in the movies, but she's also a character who, even in fan fictions where she could, based on the plot, play a prominent role or do something interesting, ends up either being killed or otherwise fridged to allow Tony to be shipped with another male character, or she's somebody who appears completely out of character. So it just seems like even when you do have these complex female characters who we could be writing fic about and we could be self-identifying with, we are choosing to not do that. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
What do you guys think about those kinds of arguments?
I have so much to say. My thing is that I have been watching these discussions basically ever since I got, you know, involved in Tumblr fandom. And there are so many arguments, and at first they're really compelling, but after a couple of years of, like, the same thing over and over again, you know, like, if I hadn't accidentally deleted my blog recently, I could give you a whole bunch of posts that summarize basically every argument I've ever seen on this topic. And I think that it's very complicated. I think that it's probably a combination of a lot of things. You know, like you say, you know, it's the shows. It's the shows that don't give us that many female characters, that don't give them a lot of screen time, that don't give them a lot of development, and that don't give them a lot of cohesive development. And then, of course, you can say there's Lost Girl, there's The 100, there's Orphan Black and Orange is the New Black. There are all these shows that are about female characters. But then you can also say, well, like, those aren't as popular as, say, like, BBC Sherlock or Doctor Who. And there's a lot of reasons why they're not as popular. And some of them can be fandom-related, them, and some of them are just, like, general society, you know, related. And that also plays into this. You know, and I definitely think that, you know, internalized sexism plays into it. I also think that, you know, just the need to write about romantic and sexual relationships that are between equals also plays into this in terms of saying that, you know, all of these people in fandom have always lived in a patriarchy their entire lives. The only way that, you know, completely healthy relationships between total equals can be imagined is if both people are the same gender. And how does this play into, you know, slash versus femme slash? You know, there's so much out there and there's so much involved in this that I don't think that I can say, oh, it's this, like, this is why Clint Coulson is so freaking popular, despite the fact that I don't think they've, outside of that one instance in Thor, I don't think they've ever spoken.
I actually have a funny story about Clint Coulson, and it gets me every time, and it tells you something, I think, about what we're talking about here, about our willingness to go to great lengths to write about male characters. And it is that in one of the documentaries that came out about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Clark Gregg says that when they filmed their scene in Thor, Jeremy Renner, when he filmed his end of it, had not been cast yet. So he said that actually it wasn't until he saw the movie that he looked at that scene and went, oh, I've been in a movie with Jeremy Renner. That's kind of cool. And so you have this entire fandom that has just built itself up into this frenzy where Clint Coulson is one of the most popular ships in MCU fandom, and it was built up over a, like, 3-minute conversation between two actors who you cannot possibly tell me had sexual tension because they were not even in the room together and didn't know each other when they filmed it. So it's these kinds of contortions of trying to talk yourself around the fact that, you know, it is this complex. I think that we need to keep in mind, right? Because, like I said, Katie, it's not that there isn't some weight in the argument of it is just, it's the media and what it's giving us.
It's a lot of things.
It's a lot of things, yeah. And I think when you just kind of have that stock answer, it's a way of avoiding talking about all of the other things. So I want to make sure we talked about them.
Yeah, fair enough.
So the other thing we have to think about, too, when we're talking about how fan fiction treats female characters is it's not just about how it treats the female characters who have come over from the canon media, but there is a long tradition in fan fiction of people who dislike what are called Mary Sues or any original characters, really, because I've seen some hate even not just on the idea of a Mary Sue, but on the idea of if somebody sees a fic that, say, Steve Rogers OC and it's Het, they're just not interested. Right? They don't want to read original female characters either. So why do you think that that happens?
I just want to say that I have felt that pressure. There are so many fics that I thought would be a fantastic idea and I'd love to write. And I just, you know, I've never done it and I'll probably never will do it because I know that fandom hates OCs and I want to write things that will be popular and I don't see why I should limit my audience, you know, writing about these original characters I'll pour my heart and soul into and will probably not get any love, you know?
Do you have any thoughts, Katie?
It's hard to try and write a strong female character that, like, would appeal to fandom and wouldn't get shot down or ignored in fanfiction. Because you're like, my character has to be good, and the characters that we've been given, everything comes back to how the media feeds us shit and how the representation is terrible, just so you know. That we don't get given a lot of well-written female characters, and when we do, they're usually not given as much as male characters are. And so when you're trying to write female characters, it's like the way to try and put that down on paper is that these female characters can't be like normal people who just go to school and go to work and all this, right? They have to be extra strong and extra heroic and extra talented and everybody has to love them, which isn't realistic because, you know, people aren't like that. And because of this, female characters who are just regular people sometimes aren't considered by fandom as being such good characters, which is unfortunate, because then they go back to these male characters. And it's frustrating that Mary Sue's are considered to be the scum of the fanfiction earth or whatever, because they're pretty harmless. Like, they don't hurt anybody. And when people complain about Mary Sue's, I constantly think about how 90% of, like, male action heroes are Mary Sue's, but, like, the male equivalent. So, yeah.
What I want to do is actually touch on some of the actual tropes and ways that fanfiction explicitly explores gender in a really specific way. So we've mentioned things like always a girl, which also, I should point out, gets called Rule 63. So for every male character, there must exist a female version of that character. But let's kind of get into it. Why do you think people are attracted to the idea of writing always a girl or Rule 63 or shifting the gender of a character like that? And do you think it really actually ever adds anything, or do you think a lot of people are just doing it and the story is the same as it would be if they hadn't swapped the gender?
I am a person who writes a lot of it because I'm bi and I really have a strong preference for girls. Characters that I would rather see romantically together are female characters. So that's just something I do. But I have seen tons and tons and tons of arguments that saying that taking characters and changing their genders from one cisgender to another cisgender is incredibly problematic and, like, discludes trans headcanons and trans, possibilities of writing trans characters and takes away from representation that there could be.
So I personally have never written a Rule 63, and I probably never will. I also don't read them very much. Like, I only read them if I'm really, really desperate. It's totally my, like, nah, you know, sort of trope. And so I can't really tell you why other people do it and why other people like it. But, you know, like, I don't really like it because I don't often feel that it's handled well. Like, a lot of them are kind of explorations of, you know, what if this character, instead of being a, you know, like we said, a side boy, is a side girl? How would that change the character? How would that change the way they grew up? And I just sort of feel like, you know, especially in fandoms that take place in, like, World War II or Vietnam or, like, the past, they don't do a good enough job kind of with the historical exploration of sexism. And they don't do a good job kind of explaining, like, you know, these plots that a lot of these characters are involved in have to be hand-waved in the first place. And then you have to hand-wave them even harder if you want a female character to get involved. And to be in that position that the male character was in before. And I feel like that's what makes these stories really interesting. And then you're kind of just hand-waving it away. Like, you're not really addressing it. You're just saying, this is how the canon works, and this is how the canon works if this character is a woman, and nothing has changed. You know, the main plot, the main arcs are still all there. And the only exploration is kind of who is the character and what does the character feel. But you're missing so much of that character development that comes from canon because you can't integrate it with this new character. And that's why I don't like it. But it's also why, like, I will still read a Rule 63, you know, Tony Stark, because I feel that there's a lot of potential there. And I've written about in the past about how much potential I think there is there and about what if I ever did write a Rule 63 Tony Stark, what that would look like. But then, you know, I also feel like that's not the type of Rule 63 that's popular. And I don't understand why what is popular, you know, is popular. So
I feel like quite a bit of the Rule 63 that I see is like an excuse to slap a vagina onto a character and have her have sex with someone. And that's not good. That's terrible. The kind of Rule 63 that I like to write is like completely what you're looking for, Dusty, so that's interesting. Where I really think really hard and consider the things that would have been different in these characters' lives if they had been born a different gender. Like, I've explored the ideas and I haven't actually written down a ton of them yet, but everything comes back to my main fandom is Shameless US, and the characters in it are that I write about are two cis men, and if I write about them growing up cis girls, the place that they grew up and the families that they grew up in are like completely, they have completely different attitudes towards women, and it's a very different place to grow up when you're a girl. So that's the kind of thing that I try to explore in the fix that I write, or at least the ideas that I come up with that I haven't written yet. I try to think about how different their lives would have been growing up girls, because like everything's different. Each character has a sister, at least one, who was hypersexualized at a young age and who has faced all kinds of judgment from their peers for being women, and who have had difficulty getting jobs because they're women, and who have had difficulty getting further in life without using their sexuality because they're women. And that's the kind of thing that I would be interested in exploring in fanfiction, and I hope to do in the future. So that's why I like writing them.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that really gets me is I just, in preparation for this, have skimmed through a lot of Steve Rogers, like, gender-related stuff. And what comes up is this Rule 63 Steve Rogers. And, you know, I haven't read a lot of the fics that I've skimmed through. But, you know, like, I bet most of them don't deal with the fact that this character probably would have been forcibly sterilized. They don't adequately explain how this character becomes Captain America. And, you know, then this also sort of plays into, like, who is Steve Rogers when he doesn't become Captain America? He's not really anyone all that interesting, you know? Like, his battle with becoming this person and this figure is so central to his story that he's almost a completely different person without it, let alone the whole gender issue.
So I agree with you guys, and I think that there's definitely some issues and problems with Rule 63, but I also think that you're right. It's not done as well as it could be a lot of the time. But my whole thinking is, when I read a Rule 63 fic that is making somewhat of an effort. So say it's putting Steve as a woman back in the war era, and it's maybe treating her the same way as Peggy. And you can even state that in canon, Peggy Carter, even though she does face some degree of sexism, would have faced more than she does that you see. So even canon tends to kind of hand wave that away a little bit, right? But to me, if I'm reading a fic and it's actually at least making the effort to engage with it, we are sitting here as, and this isn't something that might be obvious to the people who are listening, but we are all mature, older women. Honestly, though.
Mature.
But we're not the predominant, I think, age group who are engaged sometimes in a lot of these Rule 63 fics. And to me, it's almost like baby feminism, right?
Oh, that's so cute. I've never thought about it like that.
That's a good perspective to have on it.
Mm-hmm. Because when I was 13 or 14 or 15, and before I entered the workforce and before I understood rape culture and kind of before I was thinking about all of those things, my envisioning of what sexism was would have been very basic, right? It would have been the things that I saw. And if I had have then written a Captain America Rule 63 fic or written any kind of Rule 63, someone might read it and think, well, gee, this person has a really base level of understanding, because a 13, 14, 15-year-old is not thinking about things like forced sterilization, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're thinking about Agent Carter level. They're thinking about, well, gee, people probably pinched his butt and it was probably a little harder. So I don't read them necessarily, or I do, and then if they're kind of not at my level, I kind of check out pretty quickly. But I at least really appreciate the fact that they're there, because I think that they show at least some level of engaging with the idea of sexism. Usually I'm assuming at an earlier age, or even they might be written by men trying to engage with sexism from, you know, cisgender men from their vantage point and not understanding all the nuances the way that the three of us are able to do, right? So let's talk about suddenly a girl, or magically a girl, or magically a boy, or suddenly a boy.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about the ones that are actually gender swapping in midstream. Tony Stark, instead of being born a girl, gets hit by a magical beam by Loki, and suddenly he has a vagina.
Oh, no. A fate worse than death. Ugh.
These fics to me are, I love them. I love them. And I find them, when they're done well, really, really fun. But I find them even worse than Rule 63 for sometimes trafficking in really heavy gender stereotyping. And also I find them problematic from the perspective of anyone who is transgender looking at them. Because they're obviously never taking into consideration mentally what that process would be like for somebody. So I can see, Dusty, I can see on the webcam, you're so happy.
Yeah.
Would you like to say something?
Yeah, so this is totally my candy trope. You know, it's this trope that is something of, I guess, a guilty pleasure, except I try not to feel guilty about my pleasures. I love the comedy aspect of it. But I totally agree with what you're saying about, you know, this sort of mental, you know, I don't necessarily want to say mental anguish, because there are a lot of trans people who don't experience dysphoria, but like that aspect of a sudden change in your body just isn't dealt with. And also, you know, I've had a lot of other dramatic body changes. I've went through several dramatic plastic surgeries that radically changed kind of my face. And when something like that happens, when your body radically changes, like, there are psychological consequences that just aren't ever dealt with in fic. Like, ever. I read a lot of Harry Potter fan fiction with this trope. You know, that's just where it's at for me. And that's sort of difficult to try to get my, you know, love for this trope and then also the problems I've identified with it, to get those things to play nicely with each other. And on one hand, it's like, this is very clearly to me a comedic trope. And when it's done comedically, you know, like, I don't mind it. You know, there are some like little things that come up that bug me or kind of like are transphobic microaggressions that like aren't necessary to tell the story and shouldn't be there. And of course, now I can't think of any off the top of my head. But there's sort of like this deep comedy for me, especially Magically a Girl has this way more in guys, you know, who are very used to their bodies and the way their bodies work, and especially as teenagers, which a lot of the fic I've read is Marauders era, you know, James Potter, Sirius, you know, these boys as teenagers suddenly getting the bodies which they have been sexually attracted to, I just think has so much room for comedy, and I just love it because I don't think it's necessarily meant to be an exploration of gender. I think it's really meant to be more of an exploration of sexuality, and in this case, you know, young and budding sexuality, and sort of more an exploration of bodies than it is of anything else.
Katie, do you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, well, what I've read is interesting because on one hand, it is kind of problematic, like Dusty said, particularly the male to, like, suddenly a girl fix. Because it turns into, like, I can't like this, I can't be like this, because I'm a man, and I'm supposed to be a man, and it becomes pretty misogynistic, and transphobic as well. And it can be bad that way, but I'm sure there are fics there that explore it well.
I wrote a fic that was suddenly a boy, Claire Temple, and I specifically wrote it when I was feeling really dysphoric and really bad and just having this shitty, shitty day. And I wrote it to kind of explain to cisgender people, like, this is what it's like. Like, this is what it would be like if you actually did, you know, wake up in the, for lack of a better term, wrong body. And that's really, like, I think what would get my love of this comedy aspect to play nice with sort of my apprehensions about this trope for a, you know, kind of disingenuous portrayal and, you know, transphobic microaggressions would be to see more of this trope played very seriously and very tragically, because it definitely has that potential as someone who's written that. So let's see more of that.
So that being said, what do we think of fics where they are actually making the characters trans?
This is what I write. This is what I...
Me too, actually. Yeah.
And I don't really know how to explain it, I guess. I write a lot of non-binary Bucky Barnes fic. I call them Jamie. And, like, that's just my thing. And it's been my thing for about, like, 6 months now. And it makes me so damn happy. And I don't know what else to say about it. My first thing I wrote, Sense of Self, was very much, very focused on this gender exploration and coming to a non-binary gender identity for this character, Jamie. And then now the two things I'm focusing on now have much more standard fan fiction plots that I don't think that you see in these types of fics. You know, usually it's just about the character being trans and, like, nothing else. There's no, like, aliens destroying New York, and there's no sex pollen or mind swaps. These things don't get mixed together in a way that I really wish they could, and I'm really excited about, because that's what I'm doing right now.
I was actually going to say that, coming from somebody who is cisgender, my perception when I read transfics, and I do read them because I find them interesting, but as you said, a lot of the time they are specifically dealing with the fact that the character is trans. So unlike Always a Girl, these are not fics where the character is going about the standard other fanfiction stuff and they just happen to now be trans. And so my perception reading them has always been, this is just my assumption, that they're written by trans or non-binary people to deal with their own experiences, versus that they are ever cisgender people wanting to explore a trans character. So what do you guys think about that?
It's an interesting way to segue into what I write, because when I started writing fic about trans AU characters, I was still identifying as cisgender. And I did it because I got some, it wasn't a prompt, it was like there was a list of AUs, and I was like, I'm going to do these, I'm going to do all these AUs, and so I did. And I got an Mpreg AU, and I was like, I don't really roll with Mpreg unless it's ABO, or if the character is trans. So I wrote a fic specifically to address this Mpreg prompt, because I wanted to write this Mpreg fic, but I didn't want it to be like, they live in an alternate universe where men can get pregnant, or... You know, I didn't want to come up with another way to explain it, so I was like, this character was born AFAB and identifies as a man now. So that's how I got into it, as a cisgender person, and now I'm trans, but it's like, I don't feel like I project much of my own experience into my fics, because you mentioned it earlier, Dusty, that not all trans people experience dysphoria, and I never really did. I kind of always have been a person who... Like, I was always a tomboy when I was younger, and, like, I had a good degree of internalized misogyny until I was in university, basically, where I was like, I can't do girly things because I'm not, like, that kind of girl, like a lot of people experience. So I never really was someone who was very strongly effeminate, and so it wasn't a huge leap for me. I just had to kind of, like, look it up and think about some things and how I think about myself and how I think about my gender. And I'd never had a point where it was like, I don't feel like I belong in the body that I'm in and, like, I'm not in the right place. It was kind of just like, okay, now I have a word for this. There wasn't a huge step. So I, like I said, I don't think I put a lot of that into my writing. I wanted to write this Mpreg fic, and then I had someone comment on it and give me a bunch of other ideas to write with this trans character. So that's how I got into writing it.
You gave me the perfect seg, Katie, because the next tropes that I wanted to talk about that relate to gender and fanfiction are ABO and Mpreg, which I'm going to lump together because I think the majority of Mpreg now is written in ABO universes. So I'm going to start off saying I read so much ABO. I also have seen it done really, really, really well, really, really terribly. And the same thing goes for Mpreg. I think the problem with those two tropes is that a lot of people either have only encountered the worst stuff or they've only encountered the squeaky parts. And so they're missing the interesting ways that they take gender and completely kind of recontextualize it, because it's not as simple with ABO or MPreg as this character's a girl. If you're getting into ideas of, well, why couldn't people do always a intersex, or why isn't the swap always going kind of cisgender to cisgender? With ABO and MPreg, I think that that's where you're getting into the muddy waters, where people are redefining everything about the gender of a character entirely from whole cloth, which is fascinating to me. So what do you guys think of ABO and MPreg?
All I have to say about ABO is that until very recently I didn't really like it, and I've come to appreciate it quite a bit through getting into Teen Wolf, actually. That was how it happened, because you get werewolves and you get Omegaverse. That's just how it goes. So I've come to appreciate it a lot more than I used to, and it used to squick me out a lot. I was like, oh god, men having babies and, like, self-lubricating assholes, and oh god, I just don't want to get into that. I definitely was very turned off of it when I was younger, but I've come to accept it and come to realize that it's not the worst thing in the world, and I've read some really good Omegaverse, and I think that's what did it. I have some issues with it when it comes to the topic of consent in Omegaverse fix, and in the way that they go into heats and whatnot. I have issues with the lack of consent sometimes in them.
We'll put aside, when we're talking about ABO in this particular podcast, consent. Not that that's not an issue, believe me, I know that. But we're going to put that aside, and we're going to put the issues of sexuality and nodding aside, because ABO, I promise anybody who's getting really excited listening to this right now, ABO will get its own podcast, as will MPreg. And when we do talk about consent as well in the podcast, we will definitely touch on ABO again. But I'm really interested in ABO from the perspective of gender. So, Dusty, you still look very excited. Go ahead.
Don't kick me off the ABO one for this, but I can't stand it.
Yeah, I also want to say I've read a lot of really, really good ABO that, you know, a lot of other people have said, like, oh, if this is what you're interested in and this is what you like about other tropes, here are going to be some ABO stuff you like. And there was still stuff that I found really kind of upsetting about it, and that I just didn't like, and, you know, I still read it, I still got to the end, but it still bothers me, you know, having finished these fics a while ago. But one issue I have is kind of like the distribution of cocks. I've seen a lot of different, like, cocks handled a lot of different ways. I've seen where everyone has a cock, including betas and everyone, which I, you know, think is a pretty interesting way to do it. And then, you know, if you look and if you think alphas all have cocks and all males have cocks, you only have two genders, which are Omega women and Omega beta women who have vaginas. And out of six genders, like, that's kind of sad, it's kind of uncomfortable, and I don't really know, like, what to call it, because, you know, like, this really is getting into, like, biology and sex, even though it's a gender thing. Also, it's really hard to kind of deal with trans identities in Omegaverse. I have seen it handled, but then you really gotta say, like, what makes these genders, you know, in terms of, like, we really understand what makes a man and what makes a man a woman. Like, we have the gender binary to tell us these things, but in Omegaverse, unless they set it up really well before the story, which very few do, because then you get into, like, epic novel length things, there's not that innate understanding. And so then it really does feel like trans identities don't exist, which is a very weird world to live in, especially considering how much more, you know, this Omega, Alpha, Beta, male-female status is affecting people in this world compared to our world. And then the other issue I really have, you know, with some specific fixes, I have seen in someone talking about the world building for their fic, they said, I'm not going to imagine women with dicks, so this alpha females have, like, this genitalia, and then describe the genitalia. I think that's, you know, pretty transmisogynistic. Like, women have penises. In the real world, there are women with penises. That's not, like, you know, to just say, I'm not going to write a world where that happens, not only am I writing a world where alpha females don't have dicks, I'm writing a world where trans women don't exist, period. And this was also on a fic that was recommended to me for having great world building and being really good. And, you know, this was kind of the only area that was messed up in, you know, this area. Like, I'm serious. I don't want to, like, say which fic it was, but it was a good fic. And I, as someone who doesn't like the trope, am free and able to admit that. And, you know, it's my own opinion. But it still did this. And that still bothers me. And I feel like this sort of unspoken thought of, like, let's not give women dicks. You know, like, when the distribution of vaginas is more equal, there's something problematic in that as well. You know, there's something problematic in giving everyone a dick, and there's something problematic in not giving some people dicks. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this just isn't being addressed.
That's interesting to me. And I think you're right. I think that how you proportion the dicks and vaginas in ABO, it really does matter, right? And, I mean, that's what I like about ABO, though. What was interesting to me about ABO when I first encountered it is that you are actually, I think, explicitly seeing the writer's opinion on gender, right?
Mm-hmm.
More than in any other kind of fic, right? So you are either explicitly seeing their feminism or explicitly seeing their transphobia or, you know, because every fic is laying out the world building differently. So when you see ABO, unlike with certain other universes that seem to have a standard set of rules, the only rules in ABO are you've got these other three genders layer on top of the existing two. So how the person chooses to have the three new genders interact with the existing ones is up to them. How much this world prefers or dislikes alphas versus prefers or dislikes omegas is up to them, because there are fics where omegas are kind of the ones discriminated against, and there are fics where alphas are. So I've seen it addressed different ways, and I appreciate the fact that it's all laid out and people are world-building it all differently, because it really gives you a playground when it comes to that type of stuff. So going into kind of the last part of what we're going to talk about today, do you think then, after everything that we've talked about the different ways that fanfiction plays with gender, about the different ways that fanfiction deals with characters of the female gender, and about the idea that fanfiction really does provide a safe space for people of various alternative genders and for women, my question is, do you think then that there is something feminist about reading and writing fanfiction, or that innately you are making a statement about gender when you choose to read or write fanfiction?
I think that there's definitely feminist elements to a lot of fanfiction, especially, you know, I feel like there's a lot of feminist aspects to the fanfiction I write. And I would say that, like, writing fanfiction about minority characters or writing fanfics that explore oppression, even if it does so in an ABO dynamic where everyone in the show is canonically a man, or through these Rule 63 and so on and so forth, I feel that those are at once have feminist aspects, but then at the same time they kind of don't, because you're still telling a story about men, like, ultimately. And I think that everything, you know, is this way. But I would say that I feel like fan fiction has more of this tension between the feminist aspects and the non-feminist aspects within it. And I don't know if that, like, makes it more feminist. I just think that it makes it sort of, like, more intense and more, you know, important, especially to the people involved, than mainstream television shows and movies.
Excellent. Katie, do you have a perspective on how feminist you think fanfiction is or isn't?
I would say that it does a better job than most representations in the media of giving women a voice, and an honest voice, because, as you said, predominantly, women and people who identify as alternate genders are the ones writing fanfiction. That it gives people a voice in a media where generally they don't have it. And so it's a bit more of an honest portrayal of how women and alternate genders, people who aren't cis men, feel about gender and about issues revolving around gender.
Absolutely. And I totally agree with this, you know, idea that giving women and non-binary people, like, this voice is so important and so game-changing. But I worry that by calling just that simple act of giving these people, you know, a place to be heard, calling that innately feminist worries me, because I really want to ask, what are we doing with our voices? And let's not forget about that.
No, absolutely. So we're going to do some fic recs. Today's fic recs are examples of fics that we found that really push gender boundaries, explore gender as a subject, through one of the tropes maybe that we talked about, and kind of give everybody a sense of the real best case scenarios when fan fiction interacts with gender. So we'll start with you, Katie. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your fic rec?
So the fic I'm recing is a fic that I wrote, because the fandoms that I'm in, I have not read very much fic that explores gender, other than in Omegaverse, and even then I feel like they've barely just scratched the surface and not really gotten into exploring more alternative genders. So it's a fic where a canon cis character is trans, because I never see that. So it's called In Which Lip Has Shitty Opinions, And it's about a character talking to his brother and explaining that his boyfriend is pregnant, and his brother reacting in a pretty transphobic way. And so he ends up punching him. And that's basically the entire fic. It's a very short fic. And I wanted to wreck it because it takes Mpreg and kind of, like, not rationalizes it in, like, a real-world setting, because men can get pregnant. That's just a thing that can happen. But I've literally never seen a fic like it before.
Dusty, did you want to share your fic wreck with us?
Yes. Mine is called Things Haven't Changed by A Pocket Full of Fancy Words. And it's about Steve has this interaction with this, like, drugstore guy, and where this totally random stranger says something like, back in your day, real men were men, right? And it has Steve having this flashback to thinking about Bucky and remembering very intensely that Bucky was non-binary and what life was like for this character when they couldn't be out and they couldn't be themselves. And it's the first Bucky Barnes gender feels fic that I ever read, so it has a very, very special place in my heart. It's also very short, but I recommend it to everyone. It's beautiful.
So the fic that I'm going to rec this week for our listeners is called Born from the Earth, and it is a Tony Stark-centric ABO fic. And what I love about it is it's epic, for one. So for those of you who like the short read, go with the other two recs this week, because Born from the Earth is, oh my god, it's novel length, if not longer. It's one of the longest fics in the MCU fandom on Archive of Our Own, and the world building in it is incredible. It's really, really wildly AU. So if you like in-character Stark, you might have a hard time with it, because it basically transforms his entire backstory, because it goes back to, like, the moment of his birth, and everybody treating him differently his entire life, and he's a train wreck in it. He's a mess because it deals with some consent issues and rape culture. It has, I think, at one point a long kind of, here's a spoiler alert, it has a long kind of few chapters that deal with abortion and reproductive rights and that deal with slut shaming and female sexuality, because it goes so far as to have jewelry and makeup be a part of Omega culture. And the bulk of the fic is about him being a particular type of Omega that makes him very, very unstable and very, very sought after, and about Steve having kind of disorders that make him an extreme alpha. And I say that it has issues of consent and rape culture, but you should know that that's not when it comes to the primary ship, which is Stony. It actually deals with consent really well. And again, because it's so long, it's able to really get into everything in a way that I've never seen an ABO fic do before. So if you like the world building of ABO, read Born from the Earth.
So that's the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. A big thank you to our contributors again, Katie Mayo and Dusty Soul. If you're interested in reading their fics or following them on Tumblr, you can find out more about them on our Tumblr, which is otpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also find links to their fic recs there and other content all week on the topic of gender and fanfiction. Thanks to Peter Chakowski again for contributing our theme song and our logos. Please check out his webcomic Rock Paper Cynic and support him. Also, a big thanks to the folks at These Curious Times for supporting us this week. They're a great website that also covers fan culture and fanworks, so you can check them out at thesecuriousTimes.com. And finally, an enormous thanks to all of our listeners. There were dozens of you last week, which was astonishing to me for our first episode. I hope you're enjoying the show, and I thank you so much for your support and your feedback. We are available on SoundCloud and also now on iTunes, so please review our show there if you like us and subscribe there. We are also available on TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Radio if you use those apps. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter as The OT Podcast. So we'll be back next week with a brand new episode, and thanks again, everyone.